Hey, Vink. Guess what?
What?
This is number 37.
In a row?
So, Vink, did you hear the news?
Which news would that be? I've been so busy with work lately. It's just been crazy.
Well, the Giants bumped the Packers from the NFC Championship playoffs, but that's not important right now.
No!
That's not really news. That's old news. But some newer news, actually video game related, is that...
Ooh, I love new video game news.
Yeah, well, normally you might. It seems that Hudson Soft is going to be closing its doors.
But where will all the Bombermans go?
I don't know. Actually, if you look at the Wikipedia page, you can't even like be sure the Bomberman even existed. It's kind of weird.
No. There's plenty of information. Yeah, I think you just got to search for Bomberman on its own. Okay. But wait.
Yeah.
Hudson Soft.
You know, makers of the TurboGrafx-16, Adventure Island, yeah. Bomberman, as you mentioned before.
But I like them.
Well, I like them too, but when's the last time you played anything made by Hudson Soft?
My childhood?
Yeah, I don't...
I think I just found out why they went out of business. But Hudson... Soft. That's like, no, you that can't go out of business.
Well, Sega went out of business, sort of. They left the console business and got acquired by Sammy.
Well, yeah, and I guess SNK's gone out of business about 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, and also, well, you know, I was like, well, why can't someone buy Hudson Soft? Apparently, it already happened way back in 2001. So they've been part of Konami for 11 years now. I didn't even know that until I went looking for the information.
Well, they were like partnered with Konami, but it's pretty recent that they became a wholly owned subsidiary.
Well, if you call 11 years ago recent.
What? No, there's no way it's been that long.
Yeah, 2001, a year after they went public with their shares.
Well, okay. But, I mean, they still were acting as an independent company, pretty much.
Sure, sure.
Just kind of money was being given to Konami. Oh, man.
Up, yeah.
Up, down, down, left, right.
Hit back.
Start. Come on. Come on, Hudson. 30 more lives. 30 more lives.
Work?
Oh,
maybe we should just all send the Konami code to Konami and ask them not to shut down Hudson Soft.
Yeah, that sounds about as effective as any other internet petition.
6 seasons of the movie.
Oh, Community. They can't think. But no, it's not allowed. They can't shut down Hudson and Community in 1 year. So that means Community is going to get another season.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know. I'm glad that logic is completely sound.
Yes, because there are two things that I like quite a bit. Okay.
Is it so, okay?
I guess all the forces of the Bungling Empire were not enough.
Is that a Raid on Bungling Bay reference?
It is a Raid on Bungling Bay reference. Perhaps the first one ever made.
That's true.
You played Raid on Bungling Bay, right?
A bit. No, not really.
The PC version or like the Famicom?
No, I never really played it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Raid on Bungling Bay is a game. Well, I mean, it's one of the very early games made by our good friend Will Wright.
I don't think he's our good friend, but...
But... Will Wright, if you're listening to this, it's not too late to invite me over for dinner. It's never too late. Anyway, by a guy, Will Wright.
Yep.
You might know him from, oh gosh, what was that game he made? Am I pronouncing this right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sime City.
Right.
And yeah. The Simes.
Yeah.
I don't know. pretty obscure games, so I'm not sure if you're if you're familiar with them. But but he had a bit of success there. No, before he did that, he made a war game. You are a plane, I guess. Oh. I suppose the pilot of the plane. You're probably not actually the plane,
right?
And there's the bungling empire, which you are trying to destroy. You got to save your aircraft carrier, and you're trying to destroy this empire. But what was really, really neat about this game was that you wanted to destroy it pretty quickly, destroy the factories and stuff pretty quickly, because they would kind of evolve and create better weapons to fight against you. Like the city was doing its war machine, and I don't know, it was kind of like a reverse simulation game, because it's the AI that's doing the simulation game.
Oh.
And you are that monster that you hit in SimCity to destroy the
okay.
I don't know. I think that's a cool concept.
Yeah.
But what's interesting was I guess Will Wright enjoyed that city element so much, and he made a little, an engine to do that.
Makes sense.
That after the game came out, he tinkered with it a little bit more and more, and he went, whoa, you know what? I'm having a lot more fun playing around with this game engine probably than even the original game was. So he enhanced it and released it as SimCity.
What?
I know.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, I guess I'm looking at screens of this game. It looks kind of SimCity-ish. I played the DOS version. So graphically, it's quite similar.
I played on the Apple II, I think. Or was it on my friend's Commodore 64? I don't remember, but I thought it was really neat at the time. And I kind of felt bad for the bungling empire. Sometimes I'd let them build up a little bit, because I didn't want to just take them out right away. That's a weird feeling to have towards a video game. But anyway, but they develop new stuff to use against you, better missiles and stuff like that. So you really wanted to basically shock and awe early on.
Okay.
So that you could,
Well, that's all super fascinating, but
yeah.
It was kind of a non sequitur from talking about Hudson Soft.
No, it's not.
What?
Well, okay, now I know that SimCity thing maybe blew your mind, but
yeah,
be prepared. Just sit down or something.
I'm already sitting.
Oh, then stand up.
I tend to. Here, should I drink something so I can do a spit take?
Yes.
Okay.
See that cup of marbles on your? No. Okay.
All right.
So, Radon Bungling Bay was the computer one was produced by Border Bond. You probably know them from the Carmen Sandiego series.
I know them from lots of things. I think they also developed
the print shop, and I don't know.
Yeah,
they published a lot of stuff.
They were involved with at least the earlier Journeyman Project games too, I think, or something like that.
That might very well have been. Although those were made by Imagine something or Presto. Oh gosh.
Oh yeah. That's,
they might have been the publisher,
right.
Though.
You're right.
I really
Presto, and there was some right.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So they made that, but the game was ported. The game was made in 1984.
Okay.
But then it was ported to the NES and the Famicom and the MSX in 1985, and it was ported by Hudson Soft.
What? Okay, hold on. What?
better. Oh, I could feel that. Okay. but be ready. You're wasting spit because it's going to get even weirder.
Sorry.
It's going to get even weirder.
I'll take another swig. All right.
So it was a major hit for Hudson Soft. It sold very well on the Famicom. You can find lots of copies of it now because it was one of the earlier third party games. Actually, Hudson Soft was the first third party.
Oh, really?
For the Famicom. Yeah. Have you seen the Loadrunner cartridge?
I can't say that I have.
It's a black cartridge. Yeah, it's a black cartridge. It has silver lettering on, and interesting enough, it has something that looks very much like the Nintendo Swipe. you know, the Famicom swipe. We used it in our logo, I think.
Right, right.
You know, the early Famicom cartridges didn't have any pictures on them. They were just like the name of the game and like a swipe.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. That, all of like, them pretty much had it at the beginning. I remember those. Okay.
Yeah, that wave thing. So when Nintendo re-released games, they put pictures on them.
Right.
So almost every Nintendo game, like Devil World and Baseball and things like that, they have two different versions. So if you have the one with the swipe and the words on, it's, you know, from closer to the,
yeah, it's like the original
to the launch.
Yeah.
But if you have one that has an actual graphic on it, then you're getting the reprints.
Interesting. So it seems like they weren't sure what to do with that yet, because I don't think any other third parties had that privilege, did they?
I'm trying to think, but I can't think of any other third parties that. But I think, yeah, Nintendo, I think, was just trying to work it out. Like, what are we going to do for third parties? But, like, later games, you know, third parties put their own logos on, and some of them even had, like, custom cases and stuff. Koi released, like, double-sized cartridges.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of companies, you know, did weird stuff. I still like the Salamander cart that Konami released, which was like a semi-transparent. You've seen that one.
AKA Life Force. I kind of wanted to pick one up when we were in Tokyo just because it looked so cool. But, you know, the ones that were in any good condition cost a lot of money. So,
well, yeah. It's a good game, though. But anyway. So, Hudson Soft, since they were one of the first, you know, third-party companies to release games, you know, they sold pretty well. Nintendo and Hudson Soft had a very good relationship early on.
Oh, very, very good.
And actually even later on, you know.
Sure.
But it was a very popular game in Japan. I don't know if spin-off is the right word.
Spin-off of Load Runner or
Raid? Raid on Bungling Bay.
Okay.
Raid on Bungling Bay.
I don't think I've played this game.
Oh, you've played this game?
No.
Yes, you have. You've played the spinoff of Raid on Bungling Bay. In fact, I'm willing to bet that all of you have played the spinoff.
Should I take my sip now?
Take your sip.
All right, here we go.
The spinoff to Raid on Bungling Bay is Bomberman.
What?
Okay,
you're kidding me.
Spinoff is too hard of a word. That was definitely for dramatic reasons.
No. What are you talking about?
Bomberman originally had pretty much no storyline, because it was originally an MSX game.
MSX, for those who don't know, was like Microsoft's console in Japan before they like did anything like the Xbox. Right? Is that right?
Microsoft designed the hardware, but then they kind of went, we're a software company. We don't care about it anymore.
Right,
they
right.
never really marketed it in the U.S. at all.
Interesting.
But the NES and Game Boy versions of Bomberman, they added some story to it. And the story is that that Bomberman was working in the factory of the Bungling Empire. he was making bombs in an underground factory. And he grew tired of that and became Bomberman.
What? I don't... This is some kind of fanfic. What is this?
You know what? I don't know if I even believe it, but like that's what I read.
Well, so Bomberman is some kind of bungling expatriate who goes around blowing things up.
It could happen.
He's also apparently in BioShock 2, as per your observation of their game art.
Yeah. All right. Bungling Empire was also in Load Runner.
Really?
Yes. So they were, but Borderbond was trying to make this, you know, this fictional multiverse, and so the Bungling Empire was in Load Runner.
Okay.
Raid on Bungling Bay, and okay, spit take ready.
Ready.
Another Borderbond game. You've played it.
Uh-huh.
You probably didn't know you were fighting the Bungling Empire, but Choplifter.
Oh, no! I love Choplifter! Oh, but sorry.
You do love it. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I love Choplift.
Do you love it less now?
No, I love it more now. That's amazing. Oh, that makes so much sense. So you're like saving these refugees. Oh, this is even better, right? So if Bungling Bay becomes Sim City, you're saving all these Sims in your helicopter from Bomberman as you take them back to your base. Oh my God!
I don't know. I think Bomberman's gone rogue.
Oh, he's like a free agent now.
Yeah,
working for the the largest bidder. Oh,
That blows my mind. But like, I wonder if Will Wright even knows this.
I kind of want to play like The Sims. I want them to like release like a Bungling Bay expansion pack for Sims 3 or something, where like you can just bomb the hell out of your neighborhood that you've carefully constructed all these, you know, appropriately complicated lives, and then just destroy it in a heartbeat and the horrors of war. You've seen these videos where like people just like kill their Sims horribly, right? Just think of it on a much more massive scale. they wanted to incorporate like SimCity 4 into The Sims. I think it did to some extent, where you could like go down into your city and then like go into your Sim neighborhood or something like that. Like there was some kind of communication across that, and I think Sims or Sims 2, one of those two.
Yeah.
No, just add Choplifter to it so that you can rescue, you know, your favorite Sim family from Bomberman.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh my gosh!
But come on, that's pretty crazy.
I had no idea. I have learned something today.
Hooray!
How
I'm glad.
How does anyone like find this? This is.
Well, okay. So, okay, the end screen to Bomberman for the NES.
Okay.
Notes that the original white Bomberman has turned human.
He wasn't human to begin with?
Okay, hold on.
Okay. Did I get the spit take ready again? I don't think I have a lot of spit left.
Okay. At the end of it. Okay, this is the Japanese version, actually, right?
Oh, okay. Because
the American version kind of hints at it. Okay, the end of Bomberman, Japanese version. It says, "Congratulations, Bomberman becomes runner. See you again in Load Runner."
Oh, what?
Bomberman is Load Runner.
Why wasn't he human to begin with? Is he a robot? What's going on here?
I don't know, because this timeline's all messed up. Because Load Runner is an older game than Bomberman, I believe.
Right. That's so weird.
and getting back to our talk about the programmable series, it's not officially programmable series because it wasn't made by Nintendo, but the Load Runner game also allowed you to save levels with the Famicom data recorder.
Oh, cool. So that was two episodes ago when number 35 we were talking about that. I still want to try that out. Maybe do a video.
That would be fun.
Right on. We need a keyboard though, so we can have the audio out for the to record it.
So that's absolutely crazy.
I've played Bomberman, you know, and when I initially played it, I really didn't make the connection between that and Hudson Soft. What I did play a lot was, as I've mentioned many times before, Adventure Island, which is what's that guy's name?
Takahashi Meijin.
Yeah, Takahashi Meijin's Adventure Island is the full Japanese name of the game, which we talked to the people at Zoom and Saturday quite a bit about our unaired largely unaired interview.
Our interview, yes.
So he was retiring at the time, so that was why we were discussing it.
Maybe that's why Hudson finally closed. The only reason they were keeping it open was so he'd have like a place to hang out.
Right. It's like, all right, see you guys, and then it's like, oh, I guess we're done here. Like the entire support staff was just like Konami employees, like low level interns who made him feel like there was still a company to run.
Yeah. Okay, we have a press interview right now. The press looks a lot like the copy room staff. No. Relatives of the. maybe we should explain who Takahashi Meijin is.
Yeah.
I mean, you're familiar with him, right?
Let's just say I am, but the listeners might not be.
I think he's probably what you could call like the first like video game celebrity.
Ooh.
Maybe the only video game celebrity.
I don't know. I think Miyamoto's pretty widely known in our circles.
No, but he's not. But he's not a game designer.
Okay.
He's a celebrity because he's really good at playing video games.
Ah.
I'm trying to think of someone else. Maybe like Fatality or you know some of those like pro gamers. But even right. them, they're not nearly as popular because he was like mainstream known.
Mm-hmm.
So his main claim to fame was that he could hit the trigger, the attack button, the fire button, 16 times per second.
Wow.
And this is really, and he was really, really good at the game Star Soldier.
Okay.
And, you know, Star Force, which if you could actually hit that mark, actually, I think you could do it if you could hit 12 a second. But there's some of the enemies who come on the screen. Usually you just have to dodge them.
Right.
Because you don't have enough time to get in enough shots to destroy them. But if you really can master this 16 shots per second, you can just destroy them and you get like these much higher power-ups right away.
Oh, okay.
Which makes some of the earlier levels of the game a lot you know, easier to go through so you can focus on the harder stages.
Okay.
So this guy, he was famous. He would go on television shows and like do his 16 shots per second trick.
Wow.
You know, I met him once.
Really?
Yeah, I met him at Tokyo Game Show a number of years back.
Must have been 06 or something.
He was in the Hudson booth.
Oh, that's so cool.
He was like handing out fans with a honeybee on. Ooh, those have got to be worth something now, I should say. But anyway, he was at the booth. Yeah, I shook his hand.
Yeah, awesome.
He shook back 16 times and then let me go.
I was going to say, it was like, just like quivering like faster than human eye could see.
Yeah. No, but, and I bought one of, they released a product back then, which was like a 16-shot, like, training aid. It looked like a small Famicom controller.
Okay.
That just had one button.
Okay.
I think there's a start button too. And you press the start button and then you hit it as fast as you can and it times you for 1 second and it tells you how many shots you pulled off in that second.
Huh.
My record is 11.
Wow.
Hey, that's not bad. That's
right.
Not bad. It's through the training for that, because when I started, it was like 7 or 8.
Right. And,
but,
and now you're, you know, an expert at it, like, 15 years later.
But, like, he was a real, I guess. Like, an actual celebrity, like a known celebrity. Like, there'd be magazine interviews with him, and he'd make appearances on television shows, and, you know, this is, you know, in the 80s, they were simpler times.
Yeah, I guess so.
In 2005, he was on a television show, and he confessed that now he's only able to fire 12 shots per second. Well, he's gotten older, you know?
Yeah,
he did that during his promotion of Star Soldier R.
Okay.
Which was that port for the Wii. Did you ever play it? It's
no.
really good.
No, I never played it myself.
It didn't do very well because people were expecting a whole new Star Soldier game, but it was more of a time attack thing.
Okay.
Like one stage, but like you try to get higher scores and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, it's sad. It's
yeah.
But that was his claim to fame. And but he'll always be remembered by retro gamers who may not know his name.
Sure.
They might know his face. And they might not realize that they've played games starring him.
Yeah, because I didn't know that he was supposed to be like a guy, because it's just called Adventure Island. And of course, since he's a Japanese celebrity, they probably didn't make any effort to...
Nope, they call, yeah.
What do they call him in the game? They call him something else.
Master Higgins.
Master Higgins. What the heck?
I don't know. But yeah, the Adventure Island character is... Takeshi, I think they added a mustache in the American version.
No, he just has a really big upper lip or something's going on. I don't think he actually has a mustache. He just looks like some fat Hawaiian or something. I really can't.
Okay. So, Japan is called Takeshi Meiji. Dai.
It's Adventure Island, so it's like Boken Shima.
No. Well, yes. But What's weird is that Hudson already had a game called Adventure Island in Japan.
That's right. I own it, actually.
And it's absolutely nothing like what Adventure Island in America came out. Because I remember I bought it at a store, and I'm like, Adventure Island, this stuff. But, like, TurboGrafx games
right.
do not have screenshots on the back.
Uh-huh.
The right. So I thought, huh, that's weird cover art for that game. And I brought it home, and I'm like, this is absolutely nothing like
right.
Adventure Island.
Whoops.
That I remember. Like, yeah, what is this? And he was also in a Bomberman game. He was in Saturn Bomberman.
Oh. Wow.
He was in a game called Bug Tea Honey. I do not know.
Okay.
Another Hudson game.
Yeah, I think I actually own that one too, because he was yep. on the cover, but it doesn't star him. It's strange.
Yeah. Pink cartridge. You might be in they turned it into an anime that he was also in called Bug the Honey, which is the dumbest name.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And of course he made a famous appearance on Game Center CX where he helped RNO with his Star Soldier skills.
I wonder if Kotaku has translated that one yet or not.
They might. I don't. Yeah. That's fairly early on. That's like season one or two, I think. So I don't know if Kotaku is doing them in order, though.
Oh, okay.
But well, yeah, but they might have. They might have. We should see. We should see if we can find it. If we can, we should link it.
Yeah.
The name of the device that they sold to train was called the Shooting Watch, because you could also be used as a watch, a really awkward watch.
Ah, okay.
Just like the Game and Watch were game and watch, but like, I don't think many people use them as a timepiece.
Right. Wow. So it's like through this game, though, and through this character that I like became familiar with the Hudson Bee. And right. I could never figure out what that had to do with bees, really, Hudson and everything. But apparently they were actually originally called the Honeybee Soft Company before they became Hudson Soft.
So that makes sense.
I'm not really sure why the change so much, but they kept the logo. Is some kind of weird esoteric nonsense, but I love it. Yep. So I'm kind of glad they did. Actually, when we were in Tokyo, Chiba, I guess, for Tokyo Game Show last year, I picked up what I thought was a third player controller, so I could play stuff like Twin B and whatever other.
Twin B. Okay, that's a Konami game. Ah.
Funny, right? But
foreshadowing.
Hudson made the so I actually got this controller, but then I looked at the plug. It actually has the same plug as like the Sega systems, the earlier ones. I guess the Genesis, and then like the Mark III and the Master System and all that have all the same style plug. But it wasn't for that. It was for the MSX, which when we were in Friends, you know, they had like tons of MSX games. I'm assuming they had a console somewhere, but I didn't really look for it. But I also found a card reader that Hudson Soft made, and apparently they made their Who cards for the MSX originally before they wound up making the PC Engine.
Do you remember what they were called? Who cards, though? Do you remember what they were
called? Oh no, I don't.
All right. Drink water.
Well, I wasn't drinking water before.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, all right. They were called B cards. thus bringing the B back into it.
Yeah. So like Hudson had all this like crazy ambition, right? And they're making these peripherals. I wouldn't be surprised if they had something to do with other, extra controller stuff for Nintendo or other companies, but they made the PC Engine, and I think we got a bit of a bump since the news that Hudson was closing its doors for our TurboGrafx 16 episode. Someone was commenting how like, oh man, the TurboGrafx 16 was such a money waster, and I can't believe that they were trying to trick all these consumers into buying these worthless peripherals. And I'm like, all right, well, look. So, you know, if you haven't watched the video, you should watch it now. But if you realize the history of the system and the PC Engine, like this thing was tiny. It's literally the smallest console ever made, like still to this day. and which we go over in graphic, obvious video detail.
I would blame NEC more than Hudson for that one, because Hudson designed the motherboard, but the outer casings and things like that were designed by NEC.
Yeah, exactly. So they had this tiny little thing which just had enough space for the card, and then it had the one controller port. So even with like the multi-tap, you have three or five controllers that you could go to from that one. I don't know how much it cost at the time. It might be more expensive now, so a lot of people are upset about having to buy it, but it didn't add a lot of
it's
size.
It's cheap.
Yeah. You know, so NEC maybe could have like had a built-in tap or something for the TurboGrafx if they really wanted to. But if you really look at it, it's, you know, basically, except for some reason, it's just bigger, and there's all this empty space. They could have easily put one in there, I guess. Oh,
for the American system, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
The American system in general was ill thought out.
Yeah, I think part of the problem was that maybe they feared that like the original design would have looked too childlike, like too much of a children's toy, because Nintendo did a lot to sort of challenge the idea that it was just, you know, a video game system, because like, you know, they had a specific look. They were trying to make it, you know, market it as a child's toy, but it looked like this awesome sleek technology. And
well, look at all look at what they did with repackaging the NES to make it bigger and more powerful looking.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when the Mark III came over to the US as the Sega Master System, they made it black. They made it a lot more angular. It was roughly the same size, but
a little bigger.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger, but it definitely wasn't white anymore, and you wouldn't see another white system really until like the Sega Dreamcast, and look how that turned out.
Awesome. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sales numbers. So you can kind of excuse their thought process, I guess, a little bit, in that, well, we need this big black system to compete with, you know, the likes of the Master System or the Genesis and the Super Nintendo. And so, but they didn't do anything. They didn't make it more powerful, even though they could have. We demonstrate in the follow-up video for the original TurboGrafx 16-1 of the Turbo Booster, which adds AV capability, but there's like almost nothing to it. Like literally, they didn't have any such peripheral in Japan, as far as I know. They only added AV capability originally with the CD system, I think, and then they had the core.
No, probably the core.
The core came first.
Core Duo first.
Okay.
And then this, I don't know. They were very close around the same time. A decision must have been like company wide, like from now on everything has.
We should probably find a timeline for like when the core came out compared to the TurboGrafx 16. But they basically just took, you know, the tiny RF unit and just blew it up. Same board, same everything. They did change the plugs though for the controller ports, so that they were, you know, they had the same configuration, but they were like fatter. And I'm sure there's names for this, but they're not really cross compatible as a result of that. And I'm sure that was deliberate thought, because they also reversed the pin order on the TurboGrafx 16 cards.
It irritates me, because for anyone actually trying to collect TurboGrafx 16 stuff right now, it's a lot harder because there's a lot less of it out there.
Yeah, definitely. I can't find a working Turbo CD. Well, I don't really need to find a working one. I just want to find one at all. It doesn't have to work, because I have, you know, a dual RX, and I have, you know, the regular CD system that Vink sent me last year, actually.
Yeah.
And it works great. The CD is a standalone unit as well, which, you know, at the time, like, so you actually like play like regular audio CDs in it, and at the time was like kind of a big deal. So it's the only one I can think of, except for like the Turbo CD. Well, I guess the original, the Sega CD, could be a standalone unit too, because there were AV outs just on the base for at least the original Model 1. Not sure about the Model 2 so much, but yeah, man, that's a whole other story we have to get into later, I think, in our video series.
Thank you, everyone who has not turned off the podcast at this point, going, what are they talking about? If you haven't seen the videos that we did for the TurboGrafx, you should probably watch those, because we're not going to be able to explain all of this.
Yeah, but I don't want to repeat myself too much either, but it's just fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
And the reason that these systems exist in the first place, and again, we mentioned this in the video, is that, you know, Hudson being so clever and creative and making these peripherals, they wanted to make a new system, and legend has it they went to Nintendo first, and Nintendo said no. So they partnered with NEC. Like,
well, we're going to make our own system with blackjack. Yeah. Okay, but... But they didn't do what some of the companies who made their own system did, like Sony or something, and goes, we're making our own system now. We're going to make games only for our system. Hudson was like, we're going to make our own system, and we're going to make Bomberman for your system, and we're going to make continue to release games. They knew where their money was, but to say that the PC engine was a waste of money is really not understanding video game history, because from a Western perspective we see it as an also ran system.
Right.
But in Japan the PC Engine was second only to the Famicom. It totally beat out the Mega Drive.
Totally.
Our beloved Genesis. And at times, you know, it came pretty close. I mean it never really came close to outselling Nintendo. Nintendo had a head start.
Yeah,
but at times it came very close, and some weeks outsold on a weekly basis the hardware of the Famicom.
Right, so you know it was this was Nintendo's, like, at least in Japan, first real competitor, because you know the Mark III was okay, I guess. But
the Mark III was an also ran. I mean, you know, the Master System stuff like that. I mean, and the Mega Drive was an expansion upon that. Mega Drive did better than the Master System, but it wasn't until the Saturn that Sega really had a presence in Japan, and then of course in America. And then there was Dreamcast, which did pretty well in America, but kind of not so well in Japan. You know, it's like Sega's problem is they can only seem to capture one territory at a time.
Yeah. Well, I guess NEC and Hudson's problem too, right?
Yeah. Well, any. You know,
this is also Microsoft's current problem, if you think about it.
Kinda. But I don't know. Xbox 360 is doing a lot better in Japan than the Xbox, so.
Well, that wouldn't be hard to do a lot better. Is it better enough, is the question.
It's sold about three times as much so far.
So basically.
And, no, it's still almost nothing. It pales in comparison to the other consoles. What was it? The 3DS outsold the entire lifespan of the 360 in 2 weeks. No, it's more like a month.
Yeah, but that was still before the price cut, right? So,
yeah, that was before the price cut. But like it, you know, the Xbox 360 is, I don't know. It'll be a couple months before the Vita beats it. That's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole other story right there, unfortunately.
But anyway.
Yeah, so you had this amazing system. These two systems too, like together, the Mega Drive and the PC Engine, like, you know, prompting Nintendo essentially to finally make their upgrade after coasting on the you know, for almost a decade on the Famicom hardware.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so like Hudson's behavior, you know, their games to me are legendary. Their hardware, even if you haven't heard of it or didn't like the American iteration, also legendary. So come on,
PCFX.
Well, were they involved in that, or was that just NEC?
They were involved in that. I mean, no, not to speak ill of the dead, but. They were originally developing a successor to the PC Engine called the Iron Man,
okay,
which was going to be pretty cool. And they made this. I don't know if it was Iron Man hardware or early PCFX hardware, but they made an HD version of Bomberman called High 10 Bomberman.
Wait,
like high vision. High vision means high definition. In Japanese. In Japan, they call their HD TVs high vision televisions.
Okay.
But anyway, so they made this version of Bomberman, which allowed like, I don't know, 10 player simultaneous.
That's insane.
And they released, and they had it at like video game shows, like, because there was no actual hardware for it. It was running through like a prototype hardware.
Okay.
And they were showing this off in, like, I don't know, the early 90s. And it was being developed, and it just kind of disappeared.
Okay.
It just disappeared because the actual system they released was the PCFX. And for some reason, I don't know who decided this, but they were like, let's not release anything we've ever released before on this thing. Let's have it mainly be anime games and adventure games and stuff like that. And so, like, there was no Bomberman port for it. Although it was projected that someone was working on one, but the system just kind of tanked before that.
Yeah.
So High 10 Bomberman was lost to the ages until it got repurposed into Saturn Bomberman.
Oh.
You know, Saturn Bomberman has, like, that, is it 10 or 12 player mode? I don't remember. You have to use multiple multi-taps.
That's crazy.
Whatever. Oh, I remember playing that on the big screen in the basement of the dorm room that we lived in. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the dorm room, the dorm building. With 10 players. That was just crazy, crazy. Saturn Bomberman still, in my mind, is the highest form of Bomberman.
Mm-hmm.
Bomberman 93 and 94 for the PC Engine were great, but Saturn Bomberman is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So that's where Hudson made their... I mean, that was the beginning of the end. And then after that, what did Hudson do? They released tons of Bomberman games on any conceivable platform.
Right.
And they released lots of... Tengai Makyo, otherwise you might know it as Far East of Eden.
Oh.
It's an RPG franchise that they did. I think there was a really good remake of the GameCube of the second game.
Okay.
And they released there's PSP versions. I think those are some of the last games they made. That weren't Bomberman.
Right.
And of course, the long-running and critically acclaimed Momotaro Densetsu, which is a board game kind of game. I don't know. You'd call it similar to Mario Party, I suppose, sure. Which Hudson also was involved in.
Huh. I did not know that. I didn't have Spitek ready. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they made the Mario Party series. They were outsourced to Hudson.
Huh. All of them?
Until Mario Party 9. Mario okay. Party 9 was made exclusively by Nintendo, but all the ones before that, 1 through 8, were made by Hudson Soft.
Oh, now I'm sad. Those are the last Hudson Soft games I played then was like Mario Party. Oh, shit.
But I mean, maybe that's part of it. Like, the Mario Party 9 was made just by Nintendo, so...
It's like, I don't need you guys anymore.
It's like, cut the lifeline on Hudson Soft.
Wow.
But Momotaro Densetsu always sold pretty well, although it seemed to not sell as well. I mean, you've never heard of these. They were like board games, but they had kind of like train themes. Oh, mm-hmm. Train themes. PC Engine.
Right. Yeah.
Everything is connected.
Did we? Okay, so I don't recall if we actually mentioned it in the episode or not, but Hudson Soft... The name of the company, you know, after they moved from Honeybee, had to do with like a train line near yes. near where their office was or something, right? And so the yep. PC Engine was like, you know, like a train engine was the idea behind it. So just like layers within layers of like subtle references that you wouldn't get just by there's a B and there's a train engine. What the heck?
I feel really bad for these guys because they just sounded like a bunch of nerds. I mean, yeah. Who just really wanted to make stuff that they liked, you know? I mean, it's like, we like trains. We're going to have games with trains in. We like this B logo. It doesn't make any sense anymore because we changed our company name to something with trains, but we're going to keep the B in there. And an Adventure Island, that's going to give you an extra life if you can get the B. Do you remember? If you cut the B, you got an extra life.
Ah,
I think in a few of their games they had things like that.
Man, I'm sad but now. I wasn't as sad before. It's like, oh, that's too bad. It's like it's like that relative who's been sick for a long time. It doesn't really surprise you. But then, like, you remember how much you really, really, really like to hang out as a kid, and it's been so long they've been sick that you... anyway, this metaphor's falling apart, too. The point being is I'm sadder now.
I'm sadder now. Now I feel like I got to call my family.
Oh, no.
But I know what you mean. Hudson's a company that I remembered being so great that, like, I don't think about what they were doing now. I mean, I assume they were making plenty of coin off Bomberman games, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess not enough. Or maybe they were making just enough that Konami went, these guys are worth buying for that franchise and a few other franchises. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, when I first heard the news, like, Hudson Soft is dead. I'm like, were they still alive?
Right.
But like, because I didn't know. I really didn't know. Because I'd heard a lot of talk of takeovers and stuff over the years. But right. I guess it just kind of became final.
Right.
And it's sad. Because a few years ago, they were staging kind of a comeback.
Mm.
They launched a new American website, and they were talking about a lot of their titles going, and they were entering the smartphone gaming market.
Right.
I mean, they were already kind of there, but you know, they were trying to do other things, but it's just, I don't know. It's just really sad.
Yeah.
Dying relative reference actually makes sense, but. Yeah. I hope Konami treats their properties well.
So yeah, is that where they're going? Is just Konami's just going to absorb them? I guess that makes the most sense.
I guess I'm not sure where individual properties are going. I'm sure Konami's only going to keep the profitable ones, which is sad because I'm guessing Momotaro Densetsu series will continue.
Right.
It's very popular in Japan, and it will continue to be irrelevant to the rest of the world. Bomberman will continue. Oh, man. Bomberman Act Zero.
What's that?
Maybe it's better that you don't know. They tried to make a realistic Bomberman for the Xbox.
Oh, okay.
Like, Bomberman is a guy. Or a space marine or something. I don't know. But, like, he's like an actual guy. And he's Bomberman. And I never played it, so I can't criticize it too much, but it got, like, some really good one-star ratings from a number of game sites, so...
Mm.
That was kind of an ill-advised thing.
Right.
I would say Bomberman Act Zero is to Bomberman what Super Mario Brothers the movie is to the Super Mario Brothers series. It's like, what if Mario and Luigi were real and dinosaurs were in another dimension and Goombas were... And the Mushroom Kingdom was like Blade Runner, but with lower budget. You know?
Yeah.
Oh.
What a great movie.
Hey, that movie... no, I can't even continue.
It's okay.
It had a song by Roxette. Almost Unreal.
Oh my.
If that's the only thing I can think of to promote that movie, I think and it had Dennis Hopper, who didn't hop at all.
No, President Koopa was the best ever though.
Yes.
I have to say.
President.
But
I'm just trying to cheer myself up now after this Hudson loss, because I think a lot of, especially in the West, we might not know about how important Hudson was as a company in the Japanese gaming market.
Right, right.
I mean, they were a major, major player. I'd say, I don't know, they would be equivalent to like maybe our Activision or something.
Sure.
Activision being the first third-party company on Atari.
Sure, sure. Well, weren't Activision employees originally Atari employees? Like,
yeah, they were. Yeah. And they just they broke off and they formed their own company. So that's different because I don't think any of these people were. I mean, Hudson was originally a computer company founded in the 70s. Well, right. Computer software company.
Right.
But But I mean, it's one of those companies that's just that kind of really shaped the gaming market, mm-hmm. and had a major impact on like the pop culture. As I said, it spawned the first video game celebrity. It led to just a number of really, really cool things. I mean, they were involved in Bonk,
right?
Series,
right?
The PC Genjin, which is a joke because Genjin is caveman.
yep.
Which came out on the Famicom as well. That game,
oh,
but
nice.
It was changed to FC Genjin, so Famicom.
Sure, that makes.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to sit down with these guys and chat with them now.
I know. Well, maybe they've got time. I'm sorry. That was so mean.
Oh.
But no, I mean that. Like, I don't even need to chat with them. I just want to shake their hands and say, thank you.
16 times.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, I owned a lot of Hudson games, you know. When I was younger, you know, Bomberman was one of my favorite games. All the different iterations of it. Adventure Island was hard. It was a hard, hard game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a ripoff of Wonder Boy, but
it's okay.
But I mean, I didn't know that because, you know, I was young. but thank you, Hudson.
Yeah,
you will be missed.
Absolutely. Well, not sure what else there is to say. We went kind of all over the place in the middle there. So if you guys want to know more about the contemporary Sega systems like the Mark III Sega Master System, we actually did something in early 2010. Can you believe that's almost 2 years ago now? We did that Sega Family Tree special. We wanted to cover the Genesis for our first episode of Season 2, but realized we hadn't covered any of the 8-bit Sega stuff, so we sort of crammed it all into this one How I Met Your Mother spoof, and I think it came off pretty well, but we really didn't go into very extreme depth like we normally would have, so it's more jokey than anything, but at least you get to see some of the systems in action. And but if you want to see more of the Mark III, I actually ran into a Famicom Dojo viewer by the name of Earl Gray III, who wanted to purchase one from the Mad Gear booth at MAGFest just a few weeks ago. And I finally got that video up. He agreed to let me film him for a skit, which is, I think, my favorite skit since the last MAGFest one we did. Well, it wasn't really a skit. It was more like a series of interviews. But yeah, so that was really fun. So check that out. It'll be in the show notes. I'm sure I'll include a link in the video feed as well. So yeah, check that out. It's short, but it's a lot of fun, I think, anyway. And thanks again to Earl for appearing in that. Oh, and his friend, oh man, I'm gonna get this wrong. Carson, right? Who is not a boy.
there's gotta be more you can say about a person than not a boy.
She's cool.
Okay, there we go.
I got a comically large Asahi from her and her friends, so.
Hooray.
Yeah, MAGFest was good times. I hope I can go again next year. So, if not, well, you know, we'll see. But yeah, so there's all that wonderful video stuff. I feel like we got to follow up now, video-wise, with some more Hudson goodness or something.
I think so too.
So if we can actually find that third player controller for the Famicom, that'd be a good excuse to review Twin B or something.
I've got one actually.
Whoa, okay.
Do you need it's the B controller. Oh, okay. There's the B again.
Yeah, it's the B. Yeah, the I got confused because the MSX one had the same B on it, and the directional pad looked like an NES one, but upon further inspection, it's just different enough not to trigger any like copyright violations or anything like that.
Well,
trademark.
Japan's a lot looser with copyright stuff anyway, because the B controller looked almost. I mean, it was the same color scheme as a Nintendo controller.
Oh yeah, this one was like gray and stuff, so I should have known better. Yeah.
Okay, so. Gosh, we get a lot of good comments from our wonderful readers, and it seems we started a trend. We've got another haiku this week.
Okay.
Okay. This one comes from Daniel Hathcock. Here we go.
Yeah.
Sean-san and Vink-san. Retro games with modern spin. Famicom Dojo.
You took my advice. Sean-san and
Vink-san. Retro games with modern spin. Famicom Dojo. Hey!
Yep,
it works.
Famicom Dojo is 5. Oh, man. Yeah, so you got at least one 5-line thing there if you just want to use Famicom Dojo over and over again.
I know.
It makes it easier.
Famicom Dojo. Famicom Dojo plus 2. Famicom Dojo. There's my new haiku.
Oh, man.
Famicom Dojo. It's good. Famicom Dojo.
I think it's good is a little more syllables. Anyway, so yeah, yep. Check all that stuff out in the show notes. Be sure to leave your comments and or haikus, in those notes. Just leave a comment there. Or you can send them over Twitter to Famicom Dojo. We got a Facebook page as well, Famicom Dojo, YouTube channels. That's Orange. And yeah, we should
if
be putting
someone
up.
Someone wanted to record something, some audio or something like that, for us to hear, where would they send that to?
Well, we have an address, so if you send something to podcast@famicomdojo.tv, you can send an MP3 file, or you can also just call us at 608-492-1923, and that will get digitized, basically, for any voicemail that you leave us. Save you some time, but it might cost a couple bucks. I don't know how much long-distance charges are anymore. Everyone has cell phones. It's all part of their minutes plan.
I don't even know how phones work anymore, but... Back when I used phones, they went click, 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 shh, click, 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 click.
That's ridiculous.
It is. Okay. Anyway, that's all I got for this episode. But yeah, if you have anything to say or you have a haiku yourself, I hope I'm reading your poems in the original intent. If I'm not, please record yourself reading them and send it back to us.
Yeah. That'd be sweet. Cool. So I'll try and drown my sorrow in some honey mead. Would that be appropriate? I don't know.
Honey? Ooh. Yes. Not very tasty, but appropriate. Well, I'm going to pour one out to Hudson right now.
It's a slant on. Yep.
Oh, on my keyboard. Ah.
Ah. Oh, man.
That's sticky. Okay.
Anyway, till next week, kids.
Okay. Whoa, yay! Whoa!
Famicom Dojo.